Forward with him. It's a matter of rehabilitation and, you know, getting himself back in shape.
Is he still in pain?
There's discomfort after he does a certain amount of exercise. You know, so, you know, he can start off, you know, getting off his toes and doing some activity, and then, you know, he'll start.
Do you think he'll be back in the regular season?
You know, I'm just not holding my breath on a timetable. I think I told you guys that you know, we just haven't been able to put a timetable on, because it's going to take some time, and we just don't know when. You know, obviously, we'd like to have him play a couple of games at the end of the season. But this morning, I told him if that's not possible, we'll take whatever we get in the playoffs at that time.
You won't go on this road trip with you then?
No, I suppose he will. I mean, they want to stay with therapy. And, you know, we'll discuss that. We haven't really discussed it in length, but you know, we have our trainers with us, and makes it easier, but we'll see what goes on.
ESPNLosAngeles.com. This is the Kamenetsky Brothers Lando Lakers podcast. I'm Brian Kamenetsky, joined by the sounds of Phil Jackson at the top of the show.
That was the name of my first band.
The sounds of Phil Jackson. And, of course, now the sounds of Andy Kamenetsky.
That was the name of my second band.
Right.
Which made a lot more sense since I was in it. And Phil Jackson was never a part of the first band.
No, but I hear he was a fan.
Oh, he was
and
huge.
And that's important.
He used to follow us around like the dead.
He had mixtapes.
He did.
Because back then, you made mixtapes.
He actually funded.
You didn't have an iPod.
He actually funded a Kasingle for us.
I miss Kasingles.
Yeah.
Can you think of like something that has
less? Please tell me you did not just use the word Kasingle.
Yes, Phil. Not many people realize this, but we were a fledgling young band with very little money, and no A&R reps were taking care of us. They weren't even giving us any mind. And Phil Jackson, having been so honored that we named the first band The Sounds of Phil Jackson, he actually funded our Kasingle for Sounds of Andy Kamenetsky.
Was it a maxi single, though?
No. He kept things realistic.
Can you think of anything, though, in the modern sort of era that is less relevant to the way people live now than the Kasingle?
No, you're wrong. It's not irrelevant.
Do people still listen to Kasingles?
It's not
irrelevant. I got three shoeboxes of them that I still go through.
No, but beyond that, though, you guys are missing the point. The Kasingle paved the way to iTunes
and downloading a single.
That's a very good point.
I'm not saying that the Kasingle itself wasn't important. What I'm saying is like in your day-to-day life, like Kasingles used to be kind of a big deal. You pop in your Kasingle, you pop in your cuss, any of all sorts of variety. You don't do that as much.
No,
anymore.
Dude, are you kidding? There are more people.
I don't play my Walk the Dinosaur Kasingle.
Was not.
But I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, but I had that
on Kasingle.
Yeah, I know. Phil, by the way, did not fund that particular project.
No.
They had money. I guarantee there are more people rocking a Kasingle as we speak than using a Betamax.
That's probably true.
Or an 8-track.
Probably true. I don't know, actually, because wasn't there a time when 8-tracks kind of made a comeback? Oh, here we go. Words to live by, Andy. Open the door, get on the floor. Everybody walk the dinosaur, which is sort of near rhyme.
Yeah.
It's not exactly rhyme. It's near
was
rhyme.
Parentheses, not was. Close parentheses.
Right. Boom, boom, shakalaka-laka, boom. I'm not sure if this song ages well.
I'm actually pretty positive.
You know?
I'm actually sort pretty
of like,
positive.
Sort of like American Beauty. Like when you go back and you watch it again.
It doesn't hold up. Do you know the name of this album?
The Walk the Dinosaur album?
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Yeah.
What is it?
When I tell you what it's called, it matters.
What up, dog?
CJ is almost
CJ is almost having
a seizure right now. He's laughing and cheering so much.
Oh, you know what? You know what was interesting too about speaking of Kasingles. You know what the B side? Because Kasingles, the good thing about Kasingles, they came with a B side. You know what the B side of "I'm Too Sexy" was?
Wasn't it the I'm Too Sexy in Spanish?
It's exactly right. It was I'm Too Sexy in Spanish.
Right Said Fred, but right. No parentheses.
Right. Right Said Fred, but they did not come back with a second song there. They just went to the same song in Spanish.
There's a lot of depth
CJ,
to that
I
song.
CJ, I can see right now, is trying to pull up
Right Said
I'm
Fred.
Too Sexy. And it was something like soy tan sexy que mi amor. And I don't know enough Spanish to really do it. Cuando bayo.
It's a shame actually that when Pau Gasol was on the cover of Spanish Rolling Stone, it didn't coincide a little bit better with the Spanish version of this song.
Right.
Because maybe there would have been.
Did the estate, by the way, of Jimi Hendrix get paid for the little sample that he used? There's like a very little third stone from the sun. Thing
oh,
going on.
I guarantee if Al Hendrix was aware, yeah, they got paid. Because like Al Hendrix made sure they got paid.
Like, yeah. Yeah, that's in here.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't write that.
No. I'm not even sure.
We can all
agree. I'm not even sure they
read
music.
Fred. No, probably not. What do you think they're up to? I really thought they were going to last.
They kind of revolutionized the shaved head.
No, Telly Savalas did.
No, but it went out for a while.
Are you saying that Telly Savalas was the single of shaved heads and Right Said Fred brought it back?
Maybe, yeah. I'm not going to lie. I'd never really looked at it that way before, but maybe.
I'm an outside-the-box thinker. All right. By now, you have probably forgotten.
The Lakers are not too sexy for themselves
not.
At the moment.
You have probably completely forgotten what was in the Phil Jackson audio bit that we played about 8 minutes ago, before we got sidetracked, or you were so concerned by the Phil Jackson soundbite that we played that you didn't hear the what came after, which in that case you are the big winner.
Or you were online looking to try to find the Phil Jackson produced single of right. The sounds of Andy Kamenetsky.
Yes. Anyway, that was Phil Jackson talking about Andrew Bynum Tuesday afternoon in El Segundo after practice. The money quote there, I think, for people is this. I will read it to you. Phil was asked if he thought Bynum was going to play again this season. He said, quote, I'm just not holding my breath on a timetable. We haven't been able to put a timetable on it. It's going to take some time. Time after time. The key word here is time, apparently. We just don't know when he'll be back. Obviously, we'd like him to play a couple of games at the end of the regular season, but this morning I told him if it's not possible, we'll take whatever we can get in the playoffs at that time.
By the way, just to quickly circle the wagons back, and then we'll go right back to Andrew Bynum.
You got some Walk the Dinosaur in there?
No, Right Said Fred.
Uh-huh.
Two of those guys in that band were brothers.
It's interesting.
I just looked it up. Richard and Fred Fairbrass. They were Right Said Fred.
Why does Fred and not Richard get top billing there?
Because Right Said Richard sounds dumb.
That's true.
It's the same reason why they're called Bon Jovi. Cooler name?
Than as Sambora or Torres?
Exactly, yeah.
Right, but they're not brothers.
That is true.
I mean, they didn't call Van Halen Eddie Van Halen. Although they just called it Van, they could have.
You know what, they called it really anything but Michael Anthony.
Right. But they didn't call it Eddie Van Halen. It was just Van Halen, and you just said, if you were a big Alex Van Halen fan, you could say, I think that the band is really named after him.
Or you could go the opposite route, like the Black Crowes. Instead of calling it Robinson in any way, you just call it the Black Crowes.
Right. But they went out of their way to single out Fred as opposed to Richard.
I imagine Fred was the leader.
Yes, well.
Either that or maybe Wright was his nickname for
Fred
Richard.
That could be. Fred was probably the one who was responsible for the decision to put the Spanish version of the same song on the other side.
Yeah. They
We don't have a second song. Record it again in Spanish.
Yeah. So, anyway.
But back to Bynum.
Yeah.
For
now.
For the time being. This sort of Bynum, this Bynum thing, this Sicilian Bynum thing, he has now missed 8 games. He will not play Thursday in Denver. He will not play Friday in Minnesota. Minnesota.
Minnesota.
I think we can agree.
Oh, yeah.
He's not going to play, Sunday against, who do they play Sunday?
Portland.
Yeah. Sunday at home against, big game against Portland.
He's
probably not going to play in that. If he doesn't play Friday.
As we speak, and literally this will change tomorrow, I guarantee. As we speak, if the playoffs started tomorrow, the Lakers would play Portland.
That's exactly right. thanks in part to their loss against the Spurs, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But he's obviously going to have to practice. The Lakers will maybe practice Saturday afternoon when they get back from Minnesota ahead of the Sunday game against Portland. Wouldn't surprise me at all. After that, they have a Monday off before Tuesday and Wednesday, last two games of the regular season, back-to-back Sacramento, and then technically on the road against the Clippers, but I think we can agree that that's essentially
that's actually game. That's actually full circle for their season because they opened against the Clippers.
That's exactly right. It's bookended.
It is.
Yes. Similar to that Phil Jackson quote where he says the words time about eight times. I mean, just looking at this schedule, assuming that Bynum is going to have to practice, and this is totally totally not coming from the organization, and this is something I literally just thought of this looking at it. I don't know when he's going to play before the end of the regular, because they're not going to throw him on the court unless he's had a full practice, probably a full practice, and then waiting to see how he responds the next day. I'm looking at the schedule, I don't know when he's going to play before the end of the year.
It depends.
Does that make sense? I mean,
not necessarily. It depends. If he can practice on Monday.
If he can practice on Monday, maybe he plays, say, Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right.
But if he's got to practice full on Monday and then have a day to recover to see what, I think they want him to, my point is I think they would want him to run twice, full on and hard before playing in a game.
Maybe. I mean, it depends. I mean, you never know if they would take Drew and give him like a private workout, you know, like a simulated game in baseball, you know, something
or
like that, because time is running
maybe
out.
Maybe he goes into Staples Center late at night. I was watching The Natural the other day. Robert Redford comes out of the hospital to take BP.
Right.
Like late at night at Knight Stadium. Maybe they do that with Andrew Bynum. Andrew Bynum comes out there and, you know, a couple ball boys are with him helping him onto the court. And I just want to take a couple shots just to get my timing.
You know what? Just make the defenders go with you.
That's a good idea.
Just bring them all there like 1 a.m.
I don't know. Not a bad idea. Anywho. But I don't know when he's going to – I just don't know when. To me, it almost doesn't make sense to play him. Obviously, you know, it's nice to get him – you know, but if he's going to play 20 minutes against the Clippers in sort of a comeback game, is that worth getting him out on the court before he's had two or three good practices under his belt? I mean, I don't know.
In my opinion, if they're not worried about the risk of re-injury, yes.
Okay.
I think it absolutely is worth it. I mean, the continuity has been a problem for this team as it is, or lack thereof.
Right.
I think that any opportunity they have to get it, they should take it. Plus, to just get his, you want to avoid him getting his legs underneath him as much as possible in the playoffs
he
goes. So
I just wonder if one game is going to really constitute getting your sea leg
games.
Back.
It's better than zero.
Maybe.
Games.
I mean, it's better, but I'm not sure if it's enough better. You're right. The key is that
if it's,
are they rushing him even slightly?
Well, the rushing end of it, I'm putting that aside. I'm saying, if there is no risk, or if they think that the risk is minimal, then yes, I think it's absolutely worth it. I don't even think there's much to debate.
Right. You know, so we'll just have to see it. I mean, like Phil, we're not going to be able to put a timetable on this.
No.
Obviously.
And not even on the end of the show.
It hurts them. I mean, they're not playing for anything in terms of Western Conference standings and things. They got that wrapped up, basically. But they still are trying to stay ahead of Orlando, and Bynum's absence has an impact on that. And they're obviously trying to get into some sense of rhythm before the playoffs start. Andy, I'm not sure if you've noticed this. The Lakers have been somewhat inconsistent over the course of this season.
Do tell.
They have not played with...
You know what? If they want to have something to play for, technically speaking, they have not clinched the West.
They have not, but I am willing to bet that they... I am comfortable, inconsistent as they've been, I'm comfortable saying the Lakers will be Western Conference regular season champions.
Well, they need to be careful, though. Phoenix is among the four teams tied for five games behind them.
Right.
Phoenix has been a juggernaut lately.
The math, if the Lakers win
it's borderline
a game,
impossible.
Right. The Lakers win a game between now and the end of the season. And
I'm
I'd like
saying,
to remind
they
you they're playing Minnesota on Friday, Sacramento.
If they
Sacramento,
want something to play right. for, there it is.
There you go. The inconsistency. Friday night, they looked spectacular against Utah, played a great game, turned around Sunday, and played so poorly against San Antonio that the gods actually shook Los Angeles in anger.
Actually, the gods were
so angry were they at the Lakers' performance. They waited until they were all in the locker room after it, and they just started shaking Staples Center.
And I got to be honest.
Shaking it.
The gods were, they kind of messed this whole thing up because they really took it out more on the Mexicali area than L.A. I mean, really, if they were that angry at
the Lakers.
It was
Easter. I think they were busy.
But I'm just saying, you know, they probably could have made this more purposeful.
I think it was probably just to make the Lakers feel worse about it. Look what you've done. But it did, you know, and it actually was good for us too, because, we got some really good play out of footage that Pau Gasol, we were taping an interview with him after the game, and you could see that. And what's great about it is I'm holding the camera. People are going to have trouble believing this on the Lando Lakers blog, but all these videos that are on there, those are handheld.
Oh yeah.
Handheld guerrilla style film. They look so polished.
We're not even supposed to be in there.
No. They look so polished. So well done. You'd think it was done by like a film crew.
Right.
It's not true. It's us by ourselves.
No, it's the same film crew-esque type visuals that come with our introductions that we do of ourselves.
Right. The self-shot
game summaries.
Game summaries.
Yeah.
That are, again, very Soderbergian in their quality.
Oh, without question.
Yes.
Although better than that happened.
But you can start to see not only are the coat hangers behind Pau Gasol swaying in his locker, that they're swaying back and forth. I'm swaying back and forth. And Pau, to his credit, gets all the way through not just one answer, but a follow-up before stopping, looking around, and saying something.
But only because everyone else started
right.
making a big deal. Pau was
quite frankly, John Ireland of 710 ESPN and also KCAL, I think he was the one freaking out the most. You can hear him in the background going, "It's an earthquake! I think we're having an earthquake. It's
well,
an earthquake."
The point where he
guys,
started,
it's an earthquake.
The point where he started grabbing Powell's leg on
right.
the ground, that really was not
he
manly at
He jumped into
all.
Josh Powell's locker and stood there like a little girl. We have that footage too. But it was good, and then also too, it gave the opportunity for us to enjoy the endless footage on local television of swaying chandeliers. The harrowing footage of swaying chandeliers and swimming pools. Where the water was popping out of the edge of the pool.
Yeah, how everyone got through that, I'll
I
never
don't
know.
Know.
Sometimes the good Lord is just smiling down at
right.
you.
Right. Chileans and Haitians remain unsympathetic.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say. But that's the kind of inconsistency that the Lakers, that have sort of plagued the team all season long. This afternoon in practice, because this is all we ask players about anymore, we talked to Derek Fisher about inconsistency, about what they're trying to build before the playoffs start, and so on and so forth. And this is what he said.
I don't know if we're overly concerned about just one particular, you know, part of what our team is experiencing right now. I think we're all taking equal responsibility and you know, an equal amount of accountability for what's going on. And obviously, the injuries have impacted our bench more than just. Lack of performance, and you know, I still view it as just an overall, you know, team situation. That it's not about bench or starters or one or two guys. It's about the team.
5 games left in the regular season. What's the most important thing you want to see from the guys?
You know, getting and staying healthy. You know, it's no matter who you play, where you're seated, you know, what the situation is. If you don't have all your guys, it makes things tougher. So. You know, getting healthy and staying healthy will be the main key. And then from there, you know, just reestablishing the ability to, you know, play longer, better. You know, we've really had, you know, very few times where we've played more than, you know, one half of good basketball. And I say that in terms of total 24 minutes, not like a whole half where we played great. Like, a good or poor first quarter compared to a good or poor second quarter compared with a good or poor third quarter and on and on and just totally inconsistent. And so that, you know, if we can figure out how to establish ourselves where we're building momentum throughout a game and you know, figuring out how to, you know, play based on what the team's doing to us, how we need to execute offensively and defensively. Those things are going to be key. I think the other things will, you know, come along as we build if we can do those two things.
One more, please.
How frustrating is that inconsistency you guys have been going through?
That's probably the most frustrating of all. I think even as you guys so gracefully pointed out, even when we were winning games, we still just weren't playing very well, in terms of our overall consistency. There just wasn't a feel that, this team's getting better and we're going to, definitely win another championship, as though we could know that in January or whatever. But, that's probably been the most frustrating thing, with a team that, has returned 99.6% of a championship team from last year. It's been frustrating, but, that's what makes this process so rewarding, once you're the last team standing in June, and that's what we still expect from ourselves, and we're not going to give up on that process. We're going to keep going.
And so, he gets into it. That's Derek Fisher again Tuesday afternoon at practice. They haven't put together good games, good quarters, good halves. They're trying, they go out and play the right way. They're, even when they've played well, they haven't looked the way they wanted to play. All the stuff we've been talking about for the last, 15 weeks or so. The question then really becomes, are they going to be able to fix some of the things that have been plaguing them, if you will?
I think you just did.
Over the course of the season. And Andy, it's funny you should ask that question.
It's funny you should let me ask that question.
Allow myself to introduce myself. Up on the Lando Lakers blog at ESPNLosAngeles.com, Tuesday we posted a, and by we I mean me.
Yeah, as long as you've gone this far.
We in the sense of, you sometimes contribute to the blog.
Mm-hmm.
Not in this case. So if there's anything people disagree with. But we have a post up about what about the Lakers that has been a problem over the course of the season is fixable. Outside shooting has been a problem, pick and roll defense generally over the last couple weeks.
Used to be the strong
side. Right, bench play, the way the offense is running, that kind of thing.
They're getting nothing out of Morrison.
No, and I don't know if that's going to change. I didn't add that, but I think I should. Yeah, but if you
in what
in
way?
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today.
Foliage. Turning.
That's a great moment of that movie.
Yes.
Birdcage. Gene Hackman. Foliage. See the leaves turn. Is there anything that you look at? I looked at something, for outside shooting, for example, the Lakers run our test has gone into the turlet.
He was their best guy.
And he was their best guy. Shot about 28%, 29%.
He was their Reggie Miller.
Right. During March and has started April 2-for-11 from beyond the arc.
Kind of coincided, if I'm doing the math in my head correctly, when he started having these thumb problems.
It doesn't help. I don't think it helps. But at the same time, he cans him in practice. Watched him take free throws. Watched him shoot three pointers. I don't know if that's entirely it. I think he's just in a slump. You get past him. Jordan Farmar is actually overachieving based on his career numbers. Kobe Bryant, that finger is going to make it tough for him to get consistent. You don't want him standing up bombing three pointers anyway. It kind of is the least effective use of his skills.
Although I'm not sure he's gotten that memo.
Right. That's true. Fish, Odom, Kobe, Shannon Brown, and Sasha are all right at about 33%.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's bad.
Well,
it's not good.
Before he got hurt, wasn't Luke Walton shooting 50%?
He's their leading 3-point shooter.
Right.
50%.
So if we can get Luke back in the swing.
That's right. They just need Luke to become their Steve Kerr. You look at something like that, and it's hard to picture them getting, our test is not a 20% 3-point shooter. He could get back to where and I still think Fish could get up near 35, 38, 39, 40% in the playoffs. That's where he's been as a Laker. But you made an interesting point, and I talked about this in the post, that one of the things...
What'd I say?
I'm going to get to that. I'm surprised you don't remember. It's been the only one you've made all year. Oh! Zing!
Get to it.
Yeah. one thing they may be able to, that they may end up hoping for is luck.
Yeah.
Because when people make the Trevor Ariza, Ron Artest comparison.
See, now I see the interesting point I made. You didn't credit me. That's why I didn't recognize what were talking about.
Well, I'm
it's
doing
no, it's okay. I don't care.
I don't care. I'm okay with it. When people make that comparison, they also often say, well, the Lakers missed Trevor Ariza's outside shooting. No, they don't. Trevor Ariza shot 32% from three-point range during the regular season.
No, during a lot of the regular season, I know you and I were both clamoring for Trevor to stop shooting
please,
threes.
Please stop shooting.
Go back to slashing.
32%. Yeah. Right. That's not, it was saying, it was only in the playoffs where he caught fire, and not only caught fire, but went absolute nutty behind the three-point arc, almost 48% from downtown. And now that he's shooting back, you know, in Houston, he's down again near the low 30s. It looks like that was more of a fluke than anything else. You know, they got lucky. I mean, the Lakers got lucky in that sense that somebody got hot at a good time. It's hard to think that anybody on the Lakers is going to get substantially colder, so maybe they'll get somebody who gets hot.
Shannon Brown, if I remember correctly, either during the finals or just the playoffs in general, shot something like 60% from behind the arc. You know, and that is not typical of what Shannon
no,
does.
That
so
was,
again,
it is well beyond his.
But
his
again, he norms. Got it going at the right time.
Right, and you know, you can say that in terms of the outside shooting, that you know, guys will get more open shots, wide open shots, because teams will pay more attention to Powell and more attention to Kobe, who will make that kickout pass. Except, I would argue that they get plenty of those shots. Not like they take, you know, heaps of contested three-pointers.
The one thing I will say that in terms of how can they improve it beyond luck, since we're debating the if it can be done.
Right.
The one way I would suggest is just shoot fewer of them, because I don't think they're selective enough.
Absolutely.
I think that's part of the reason that they
point.
Make. You'll see
Shannon,
a lot of.
By the way, was 48%.
Okay. There was one round where he was like 60.
48, but 48% is pretty good.
Yeah. 48% will get you
that'll
among
get,
the league leaders.
That'll get
that's
it
Kyle
done.
Korver.
Right. That gets it done.
But I mean, I've noticed, and it doesn't hold every quarter, but there are more quarters where they're 2-for-11 from behind the arc than say 0-for-3.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of.
There are
of
too many at the very least.
Right. But you'll see a lot of 2-for-3, 3-for-4, you know, where they keep it under wraps and they keep the reins on themselves and I think they look to find better ones and take them when necessary, as opposed to trying to just get everything back at once.
Right.
Or just try to bury a team right away.
Other things that I talked about in this post that, you know, that we've been spending a lot of time on, we talked about the bench. I think the health is really the thing that's going to either get them back together or not. I mean, I would assume
the bench.
You would agree. Yeah, the bench. I mean, it's hard to imagine all of a sudden guys are just going to be spectacularly productive. But if you get Andrew Bynum back now that Walton's back, maybe he plays, picks up a few extra minutes here and there. You get Lamar Odom back to the bench, and all of a sudden it doesn't matter quite as much. You don't need Powell, Farmar, and Shannon Brown to play well on the same night. You need one.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, I think, just makes a difference. Without that, I think it's hard. Without health, I think it's going to be hard to expect much more from the bench.
Question, would you consider starting either Walton or Powell or someone else just to
no,
put Lamar back?
I wouldn't. And
it's not what I would do either, but another media member and I were talking
about
it.
I wouldn't do it because I feel like what you're really doing then is hurting both.
I just feel
like you're really screwing with your rotation in an effort to make your reserves play. I would just figure out a way to get your long. You're just going to have them play longer minutes with your starters.
No, it's not what I would probably do either.
It's something worth putting out there. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about like the idea of even if say you started Josh Powell, then you have Luke and Lamar on the bench, and
yeah,
you could really actually maybe turn it into a pretty solid one.
Maybe.
That the bench production
maybe
might outweigh whatever
Walton,
you lose
but,
in Powell.
Right, and maybe. I just feel like I don't necessarily think – I think the first unit would suffer
they
more
might. They might.
With a guy that doesn't fit quite as well, isn't as dynamic, doesn't do as much. You just have to play. And the other thing is in the playoffs, your benches get shorter anyway.
True.
Starters play longer minutes anyway, so – aside from somebody giving Fish good minutes behind Fish, it, you know,
we may see in the playoffs if Bynum's not back, the first ever five man rotation throughout.
You know what?
Each round.
If Bynum's not back, they might go with four. My team's on the floor.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because, you know, Luke, Jordan, and Shannon, at this point, without buying them back, are the only guys, I think, from the bench that have a prayer
you never
in
know.
Regular
I mean,
minutes.
Sasha apparently has made amends with the coaching staff and got himself on the floor early in the San Antonio game. It's possible
it he could
his way back in, but
I doubt it.
I don't know. It's too hard. But like, if you had to pick anything else, I talked about the bench. I talked about offensive flow. I talked about the drop off in the defense. Those are a few things. I mean, if you had to pick one thing that you think absolutely positively can get better as they enter the playoffs, what do you think it would be out of those things, were the shooting, the bench, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, you had pointed out defensively they could, and yeah. I agree with you. They are capable of playing. We've seen them play
right,
better.
Right, it's the one thing they've shown they can do.
And even what they lose in Bynum, I still think they can get that back. I definitely agree with you that the ball movement can be better, because a lot of times that's just a conscious choice to either be better with it or not be better with it.
Right. Make the extra pass. Talking to Jim Clements today, we were both standing there, you know, just about how the offense works. Not taking the first open shot that's available and maybe working to find a better open shot.
Right,
so
exactly.
That kind of thing.
Just because you're open, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a good shot.
Right. Depending on who's open, it might be, you know, bad.
You know, one thing you didn't list that obviously needs to get improved upon, and it's a little bit esoteric, so it's hard to say whether they can or can't, but I think one issue is they need to get out of their own heads. I think at this point they've grown frustrated with what's going on. I don't think they quite know how to fix it, at least immediately. And it's
right.
been very clear from the way they're playing, they're looking for an immediate fix.
I think they're getting a little better about that. I think for a while, I think, you know, early in March, what month comes before March?
February?
I think late February, early March, I think they expected to be able to hit that switch and turn it on. I think they're getting better about that now, but you're making a good point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point where I think they have to just let it go.
Right.
And start from scratch, and that's easier said than done. I don't know if they can do it, particularly if everybody isn't, you know, having like a mind meld at the same time to do that, then it doesn't matter if half the guys are.
That's
it
true.
Really does need to be everybody.
We will find out. Of course, we'll find out if the Lakers have instantly fixed their problems Thursday night in Denver. Thursday, Friday, there are only five games left, and I think they understand that they're, you know, this idea that they're going to be playing their best basketball going into the playoffs probably isn't going to happen. They just need to be on an upward, to paraphrase Sick Boy, they need to be on a generally upward, an otherwise upward trajectory.
Exactly.
As opposed to downward.
They don't want to be Sean Connery.
No, but there'll be a lot to talk about later in the week with the Denver game. Certainly if something goes wrong in Minnesota.
Right.
Good Lord, help us all.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Yeah. For them to help us if something goes wrong. I mean,
I'm not really sure they could play bad. I think they could really play poorly and just
still beat Minnesota.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, so that's that. That's anything else you can think of? Any other casingles of memory?
I'm trying to think. I used to have the Bat Dance casingle.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was, actually. I mean,
I also had Electric Chair, I think, on a single.
Yeah, well, that might have been
the same single.
It might have been the same single. It was off the Bat
movie,
Dance.
Right.
And it's weird because I had the album, so I don't quite know why I had the single.
Yeah, that happened a lot. CJ, did you ever get casingles for when you had the album, too? That's just a waste of time and money.
Oh, yeah, I would, absolutely. Because you get the single before the album comes out because you want the song.
But did you ever do it the other way around?
No.
Okay.
That's probably what happened in this case. Neither one of us could wait. I mean, they were only like a buck. I mean, they weren't that expensive.
They were tantalizingly inexpensive.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why they were put right at on the little end caps before you get to the register.
I'm trying to think of any other casingles. I might have. I think I had a Sophie B. Hawkins casingle.
Oh wow!
Damn, I wish I was your lover.
Yeah,
I think I had that.
You know what? The other big thing.
She's an attractive lady.
The other big thing, and I think we've talked about this before, but I don't know if we've ever talked about it on this. That was like the big leap, or like what you thought was gonna be the big leap, like when casingles came out. Like, oh my God, they could put just one song on a tape. Clear tapes.
Yeah.
I remember the first clear tape I ever saw, like clear cassette.
Clear tape, you'd seen plenty of that.
Right, no, but clear, like scotch
tape. The first time I saw scotch tape.
Oh my God. I was at a birthday party. I was about 7 years old. It was a Rick Springfield album and you could see the tape inside the cassette, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, it is never going to get better than this.
Yeah, I actually, I remember.
It is over.
I remember, I think the first clear cassette I had was the Aerosmith Done With Mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
And the clear.
You can see right through that bad boy.
The clear cassette angle of it, that element of being able to see straight, you know, I could hold it and see my palm while holding it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so.
You can see how far into the cassette you were.
It was so mind blowing that it really distracted from the fact that it was a terrible album. It was just horrible.
Yeah, I don't remember how good that Rick Springfield.
Well,
album was,
Done With Mirrors had a lot of gimmicks. Like the album cover was backwards, like, you know, because it was Done With Mirrors.
Right. So you have to hold it up
right.
to a mirror
and
to
like,
see what you're listening
would,
to.
And you would open it up, and you know all the liner notes and all, you know, you'd unfold
backwards.
Yeah, all backwards.
Yeah.
Kind of annoying. If you actually wanted to read it. Like having to stand and hold the inside of a cassette case up to a mirror to find out who played, who like produced.
But you can't just read backwards, or is it just too hard for
it
you?
Was, it got to be a headache after
it's
a while.
True. I mean, it would be, that would be irritating.
Plus, they instructed you to do it with mirrors.
It was like that,
Steven Tyler told me.
It was like
me to
that one character on the superheroes used to say everything backwards. Wasn't that Mixelblick?
Mixelblick, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, I believe it was
everything backwards.
Yes,
it was very. It was. He was a.
I don't think he said everything backwards. Yeah, I think you had to get him to say his name and then disappear.
Something like that. You shouldn't fall for that one more than once.
He was an imp.
Literally, I think.
Yeah,
actually, was an imp.
Serious. He was an imp. Biologically speaking, he was an imp.
It is fair to say that some of this content today wandered, but that's fine.
You know what?
It's fine.
I think,
frankly, we spend too much time talking basketball here on the Kamenetsky Brothers Land of Lakers podcast.
I also think that during these troubling times for the Lakers, sometimes you want to be able to think about them, but also get away
right,
from them.
Right. Maybe take your, you know what, put a little dinosaur on a leash, take him out, and walk him.
Exactly. While listening to the sounds of Andy Kamenetsky.
Right.
Produced by Phil
Jackson. Are you shaking your head because it doesn't matter how long we talk, you're not going to be able to bring up the sound again?
Can't pull it off this time.
Okay, that's fine. All right, well, anyway, in that case, we will see everybody next time.
See ya.